Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a safe place for leading with your heart. Hey, thanks for being here. You, Me, Empathy is the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective, a collaborative mental health community designed to empower each of us to grow our capacity for empathy, vulnerability, and emotional wayfinding. Just a friendly reminder that this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. No one is just a silly boy with a feely heart. You can support the show by leaving a review in Apple Podcasts, following us on social media at Yumi Empathy and Feely Human, and joining the Feely Human Collective community at feelyhuman.co. And now your host, Noan Wells.
Hello, Feely Humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. My name is Noan Wells, and I am the creator and host of this show. I'm also the founder of the Feely Human Collective, where we collectively, not individually, collectively, together, with our soft hearts and our mushiness and our messiness, together grow our capacity for empathy and vulnerability and emotional curiosity. You can learn more about all of that at feelyhuman.co. This is episode 219 on community as an antidote to suffering with Becca Piastrelli. Becca and I explore the journey of connecting to our bodies, the discomfort with being imperfectly human, silliness as a resilience builder, and community as an antidote to suffering. Really, really loved this conversation. I was reflecting on it after the fact, after I recorded with Becca, and I think I sent her a note of the same kind, but I felt right away at ease. I felt softening. I felt like, Becca is my people, and I could have talked with her for hours. It was lovely. Becca's wonderful. She is the author of the book Root and Ritual, which is beautiful. It's about connecting to self and land and lineage. And to the earth, it's beautiful, and I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful book, both in its language and in its ideas and its heart and in its illustration. It's quite lovely. And Becca's also a podcaster. Her podcast is called Belonging, and I think she has a new episode today. So go check that out, too. Go subscribe to Belonging, the podcast. Really love this conversation. Just all of it. Really grateful for connecting to Becca. Before we get to the episode, I want to just remind you that a very exciting thing's happening starting April 4th. I don't have a landing page yet for you to see, but on April 4th, I am launching with the Feely Human Collective a new inner child journal. It's called Dear Childhood Me, something I've been working on for the past year. Actually, I conceived of it a couple of years ago, but it's now here. It's going to be here April 4th, and I'm pre-selling it for a limited time for 1 month, from April 4th to May 4th. It's called Dear Childhood Me. It's a journal, and it'll be available soon. So look out for that if you want to learn more or be a part of the launch team. I'm looking for folks to just help get the word out about it. If you're interested in that at all, just email me. Email me feelyhuman@gmail.com. You can email me at feelyhuman@gmail.com. Follow the show on Instagram at YumiEmpathy. Follow Feely Human on Instagram at Feely Human. Make sure to leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That does truly help out the show. And if you want to support me in another way, I'm on Patreon, where you pay $5 a month and you get a bonus episode every month. And this month's episode, which I will be posting this week, is with the wonderful Poppy Lynn. We talk about all sorts of things. You'll just have to find out. Check that out at patreon.com/feelyhuman. Okay, let's get to the episode with Becca Piastrelli on community as an antidote to suffering.
Thank you.
Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective. On this show, we explore the struggles, the triumphs, the brights and the darks we face as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our mental health, our neuroses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, I am an ancient oak tree on the ancestral lands of the indigenous peoples of Tongva, Today, I'm an ancient oak tree on the ancestral lands of the indigenous peoples of Tongva, gnarled and knotted, rooted and ready for the nourishment brought by the wonderful host of the Belonging Podcast, author of Root and Ritual, and seasonal wayfinder. It's Becca Piastrelli. Hello, Becca.
Hello. What a beautiful, exciting intro.
I have fun with it. It's a fun thing for me. It's a little bit of writing. It's fun.
Yeah.
So happy to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Yes, likewise. So, Becca, we always kick off the show with an emotional check-in. How are you feeling?
I feel weary.
Okay.
Emotionally weary. Yeah, I think in my feminine cycle, I'm on the end. I'm at the end of it, about to go into menstruation next week. And that is when I often find it's like the my body's end of autumn, beginning of winter. That's sort of like going within, winding down. So I'm starting to feel tingles of that in my system.
Okay. I love that. And I have many questions. The first of which is the body, right? So I am working on being more connected to my body, Becca. It's something that I struggle with.
Same.
As someone who's just trauma, eating disorder, etc., right? And I know how crucial it is. Has that been that journey, sort of being connected to your own body? Has that been tough? Has that been easy, etc.?
Super tough. Yeah, I think we live in a culture and a time when a lot of focus and extraction of our energy happens from the neck up. And it's very mind heavy.
And, head over heart.
Yeah. So, and my family of origin was very intellectually, that was like the currency of love, was like how much you know. So, embodiment is like new for my ancestral line of recent. And so, it is a practice I have to recommit to every day because it could easily just fly away.
And when did this sort of focus on or exploration of embodiment start for you?
With pain. With pain in my body. Yeah. A real feeling of like, I can't numb this away anymore. Like it's too loud.
Like a physical pain you're talking about. Well, I mean.
Yes, maybe, I was talking about physical pain, and now I say more than that. Now I say emotional pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, like psychic pain, even like really intense. Like people are trying to get my attention, beings, body parts, ancestors, soul. Yeah. So it was, and it wasn't one big moment, but it was several moments where I was like, all right, can't really not pay attention to this anymore.
Yeah. Is this related to since you've become a mother, or is it before that, or?
I feel like it was before that, and becoming a mother is like part two. It's like next layer of the onion. Yeah, it was in my mid-20s, and I was doing like the corporate thing, and I was like following all the rules, the prescribed rules of the culture, and not really interested in looking at the feels. It was more about moving through the day, getting through the day. And really not feeling a sense of purpose or meaning. I was unrooted. I was really unrooted. And it started in my leg. And now my leg is talking to me again in this next iteration of my life. But yeah, and then it was, yeah, my heart and my digestion, and my heart being like the emotional heart. And then my digestion being the physical digestion. Yeah, that was like a turning point. And that was also when I started to really begin this journey of understanding a feeling of unbelonging and how to, and this phrase coming home to yourself, I had heard was like, whoa, what is home? And what am I trying to do to fill this like existential ache in my muscles, in my digestion, in my heart, in my soul, and what could maybe actually shift that instead of trying to fill it or numb it? Well, how could I actually shift it to feel a deeper sense of wholeness? Yeah, so it really did begin with body pain.
That's hard work. It's such hard work. The I mean, because to sort of know or to listen to our bodies requires a certain sense of peace or acceptability of like who we are, or an awareness of self, or just letting go of some of the systemic self-esteem issues that happen in our world. All of those things, I mean, so many different layers of blocking that happens that disconnect us from our bodies. And I'm in it. I'm in the thick of it right now. So it's kind of raw for me. But I guess for you, like, how did you, 'cause you described this corporate experience. I think we can all probably relate to some of that, where we're like, okay, this is, I'm going to college. After college, I go to do the thing. I have the Monday through Friday. I got to get through the day. I got to check the boxes. And then hopefully there's a moment. I certainly had the moment where it's just like, just doesn't feel right. And then let's explore that. And what did the initial exploring look like for you?
Oh, it was so clunky.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's things. Like in retrospect, you can see the path through the trees, but in the moment you're like, where the am I? Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
It's hard work. I agree with you. Yeah. It was a lot of, I had a blog then called The Dabblist, and I was sort of like, I needed a persona in order to give myself permission to clunkily try new things, to try to feel different, to have a new way of being. And so because I was really working on healing, continue to work on healing a real perfectionism, a real discomfort with not being, with not having mastery, a discomfort with being imperfectly human, which I can really trace to, yeah, living in capitalism and a competition-based culture where you have to be the winner or you're a loser. There's no real permission within that to explore. And I didn't come from a family culture where that was encouraged. So it was new and scary for me. So I had to really work under this this archetype of the dabblist, of dabbling. And I just followed my creative curiosity and tried things. And really what was calling my name was the natural world, the living world. And I got really into, became an apprentice to herbalism and started cooking my food. Cause like I literally wasn't cooking my food and learning so much, learning about how to be in relationship with people where it wasn't like unhealthy relating. I just dove in and I had to make it all little experiments in order for it to feel like a safe journey to take.
That's really like I hope you look back at that time, Becca, and give yourself like a great deal of like so many hugs, and because like that's genius. That's like what a beautiful way to armor yourself up a little bit to go out and do these like scary, courageous, vulnerable things in ways that you're still, you know, you have the, I'm the dabblist and this is what I do. I'm an experimenter. You know, you're able to sort of explore parts of yourself through this lens in a safe way. Like you said, that's really brilliant. I love that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I appreciate that reflection. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's really cool. Because I think what I find to be true for myself and in conversation with a lot of different feely humans is that it's hard to know what to do first and then what to do the next step and then the step after that, if there are any, or where it goes, right? And more often than not, and I think this is what your book speaks to, it's about and being connection to something and how can we sort of use that or operate within the lens of collective in a world that is so capitalistic and individualistic and we're beacons of strength and all this stuff, right? And, you know, there's so much intersectionality at play there that needs to be talked about as well. But like, it's hard to take that first step. We're not, we don't really know what it means. Every first step is different. It feels scary. It feels unsafe. We don't have the words. We don't have the language. We don't have the, we're not taught it in school. Yeah. Most of us like grew up in familial or for me, evangelical systems that are so part, like so crucially bypassing of wholeness and self. And then when we get to our adult years, post-college or whatever, when we start to feel the urge of like, this doesn't make sense, it feels so fucking scary.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Oh, there's so much to be said there. I what I've been sharing in a lot of these interviews on this little virtual book tour I'm on is like, I just want to be clear about this book. It's not like 10 steps to finally feeling like you belong. And if
that's
anyone,
a capitalistic lens.
If anyone is selling that, don't believe them because, which is also like what, like religion, you know, which you've brought into the conversation. Thank you. We as human beings have been searching for the way, the answer, the savior, right? And like, just to bring what you said at the beginning is this is hard work. And really the great, what brings the most grief to me is to realize that like we, as our ancestors, we as humans did have a deeper connection to our intuition, to our bodies, to the earth, to each other. And it's been, and I talk about this in the book, it's been many, 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 many generations of severing us from these communal, I'm using these words, everyone's got different words, but like you said, language is limited, communal ancestral ways, these ways of being that I think in this time we're living in, which some call the Eromycene, the age of loneliness, we could use a little bit of looking back to be like, wow, this way isn't working for many parts of myself. So what can we bring in here to bring more meaning and just to feel better? And that has to be an experiment for each of us. It cannot be one way. And the book, even my book, is divided into four parts: land, lineage, community, and the self. And those were my four areas.
Yeah.
And that's what I say. This is what I did. This is what I'm doing. And others may have other areas they need to look at. But yeah, it's scary and courageous to take a look at that, because it is such an individual journey.
It is. It is, and we need each other. It is, and we need community. It is, and we need collective, right? Like, I think there's maybe an assumption that it's a foregone conclusion that we just have progress as we get older, as we bring on a new generation. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I think that's because of the work we're all doing individually and collectively, right? It's the looking back and the looking forward and the looking inward and the looking outward and the curiosity and the asking questions, right?
Yeah. I always like to say, like, we have to respect each other's individual journey, but we can't stop holding each other's hands through this. Like, and what if we could be in a space where we could all, we could all be okay in our different places on the path and the different areas we're looking: inward, outward, behind, forward, up, down. And I think there's a general discomfort with that, because I think we're all looking for the prescription. And I do think community is the antidote to so much of this suffering that we're in. And that in itself is quite uncomfortable for so many of us, which is understandable.
Yes, absolutely.
Very understandable, but doesn't mean we shouldn't try.
No. I say it all the time. I think we each play a role. We each play a part. You know, we're not all going to be the book writers. We're not going to all be the Beccas. We're not all going to be the people marching in the streets. We're not all going to be the letter writers or the connectors or whatever. Like, we need all of those roles. We need all of those parts.
That's a healthy ecosystem right there, right?
Yes.
One that is diversified.
Yes.
In all ways, right? The healthiest soil comes from growing many plants, not just the same one. Yes, something to always keep in mind. Yeah, except the healthier ecosystem is one that has every kind of plant and animal and soil microbe and mushroom and all of it.
How does, you know, you speak about connecting and connecting to lineage and land and self and community in a way that, you know, just kind of seeps with empathy in my mind. Like, that's how I read your language. Do you think about empathy? How do you sort of contain empathy in your day-to-day life?
Oh, it's a very high value of mine. It's like the armor melter. You know, it's such like a, I find it to be an effective tool, right? Mm-hmm. And it also like is very soothing to my nervous system. You know, it's like the ultimate like co-regulator. Like, I'm feeling it with you right now, right? I'm feeling such a softening, and that weariness that I brought in here, I was a little prickly. And now I'm like, no, I'm just so gooey here with you, which is a goal of mine to soften in my life, because I think that's what brings us closer to each other. Yes. And remember, I believe community is the antidote. And in the time that we are talking and recording, in this time, I find that we are fearing our neighbors, you know, and that we are scared of each other's bodies, and that, and we need each other, you know, like, that's not just like a something to like put on a quote above your door. Like, we really need each other.
Yeah.
To get through. I mean, every human being has a moment of a radical life transition or a moment of health crisis or a moment of grief or a moment of rite of passage. And we need each other to witness each other through it, mm-hmm. To support each other through it, to like literally feed each other through it. And I'm saying this with such fervor because I just became a mother in a pandemic. And I was like, I can't do this alone. This is impossible to do alone. And everyone's like, well, good for you for doing it alone. You're so strong. I was like, I want someone to come over here and hold my hand while I cry.
So interesting. It's what we value. Look at them on their pedestals. Look at them. Look at these heroes.
Strong.
Look at these heroic figures.
Yeah.
I hope we get to a point where we say, instead of that, look at that community. Look at the way they connect and work together and love each other and care for each other. Mm-hmm. Oh, I aspire to that.
Look at them staying in the discomfort and navigating that conflict and getting to the other side.
The best.
I know.
So as you're a big-hearted, feely person, I've been holding this in my heart and then in my head as well recently, which is the idea of being big-hearted and then with that coming lots of grief and loss. And then also with that wanting to sometimes just like take my passion to like the utopian dream state, which is not based in reality. And that says, fuck all the systems and burn it all down. Mm-hmm. And knowing in my head, that's not useful. That's not perhaps wholly empathetic to all who might be impacted by that framework, right? Mm-hmm. Do you ever struggle with that? Because like, so for example, I'm like, let's just go start a commune. Yes. Like, let's do this. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And then, because there's a part of that's like, fuck you to everyone else. And I don't believe that either. So there's a part of me that's just like tired and overwhelmed with the stuff. And I just want to maybe flee in my own utopian vision and passions.
Yeah.
And not try to keep sort of moving the needle or changing one heart at a time.
I'm dreaming of the commune too. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're talking in a particularly challenging moment culturally. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I don't have the answer. I am fascinated with intentional or land-based communities and have been in my hobbying moments researching particularly the ones that really blossomed in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s after a time of like big upheaval culturally,
yeah,
at least in the United States, North America. Mm-hmm. And I've been really interested as to why they have failed, the ones that have failed.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, and a lot of times it's like sex, power, money, these sorts of things. Yeah. So I know it's hard. I know that's hard too. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen, there are some really beautiful ones out there. And I think what has worked is being willing to, whether you go and live on a commune or you're, you know, sticking with it in the city or wherever you are, it's hard and it needs, there's something about the resiliency that we can build within ourselves from an emotional standpoint of like expanding our emotional capacity. And that is what can often feel unsafe.
Yeah.
When most of us are incredibly under-resourced.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to resource yourself. It's hard for me to resource myself, right? When I just like have a small baby and I'm breastfeeding and I have reduced sleep, and that is temporary, but it's true. It's hard to resource myself because I have to make money and put a roof over my head. It's hard to and also it's hard to resource myself because it's difficult sometimes to remember. And so it, to me, it feels like a fractalized This is definitely me thinking out loud, by the way. It's a fractalized thing where it's like, it's not a linear path.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, what needs care now? And then what does that resourcing or care lead to next? And then who's supporting you in that? And who's witnessing you? And who are you supporting as you're doing that? And then, yeah, like I always think about it seasonally, but then like, what's it like for you seasonally in the winter? What's it like for you seasonally in the mm-hmm. spring? And are we going slow enough? Are we trying to rush through this? Can we slow it down?
Yeah.
So these are all things that are going through my mind right now in these moments where I would just like to put the middle finger up and run away. And I have legit gone online and looked at land property. Like I truly am with you in the like, can we just jump over this?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think even on our dream communes, there will be forms of this to navigate mm-hmm. whatever this is. I don't even know what your this is, but I can guess what your this is. And I've got my version of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So my real focus is resourcing myself to expand my capacity and doing it slowly.
It's beautiful. I think that's incredibly wise. And I like that you started with the emotional piece. I think that's a crucial one. I think what is very clear to me is a wide-ranging ability to be present with ourselves. You know, if there's one thing that we've learned or have conceived in this time is like there's been a disruption, right? And sometimes we want to, as you said, like move through that quickly. Sometimes we want to deny it altogether. Sometimes we can face it in ways through safe containers. But what is always, for me, what is always rooting me is my own constant, vigilant, active, messy, mushy, ongoing grappling with who I am and how I show up in the world. Am I doing my own work? Am I growing my capacity to be witness to each other, to people mm-hmm. in my lives, to the people I love and care about? I lead this emotional check-in series for Feely Human, and we were talking about what a safe space means. I mean, as you know, in this, you've probably heard that word many times, mm-hmm. and it's been used for not so good things. It's been used to exclude. It's been used in ways that weren't fully realized or based in truth, etc., right? But it's one of those things that is so crucial to all of this is like, what does safe mean? And that is a hard thing to get to. I think it's different for everyone. And I think it needs to be collective.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, safety is totally a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about that lately of like, can safety be achieved? And if I say no, what does that mean?
What does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah. And I aim to be a walking safe space, a living, breathing, walking safe space. I love having conversations like this.
Me too.
I love listening deeply. Mm-hmm. I love it. So if I am to believe that safety actually cannot be fully achieved, what am I doing? Like, what are we doing here? So indeed. I'm with you. I'm with you on that, in that exploration, in that inquiry mm-hmm. around it. And I think it's not a quick path and a quick fix, but I think you're really on to something in encouraging folks to really check in and be present to what they're feeling. I think that is a baseline thing. And you mentioned grief.
Mm-hmm.
That has been a theme in my little book, virtual book tour. And I think a theme like collectively that I would just love to hear what you have to say about it, because I think that is so needed. Our grief is so needed. One of my teachers, Joanna Macy, who does the work that reconnects, talks about like the first step to any sort of radical change, right? Reconnection is to grieve what has been lost. Mm-hmm. And she leads these grieving rituals. I've been a part of these very intense, emotionally intense grieving rituals. And I got to tell you, I felt cleansed. I felt nourished mm-hmm. by collective grief. And then I got really interested in the keeners of Ireland and the professional grievers of these African villages, the way in which some cultures have been able to hold on to the fact that the wailing needs to happen. And I wonder if that's also, because you were talking about blocks, right? Blocks to getting to this place of safety or connection. And in this moment, this zeitgeist, right? This moment, I just read in the New York Times about a bunch of mothers in Boston went out to a school field and screamed for an hour.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. And I watched like a little video clip of it, and they're like, it was incredible. Mm. They just needed to wail for this moment in history where they feel so out of control mm-hmm. with what's happening and their inability to like really find any sort of center. I think, oh, that's a grief ritual.
Yeah.
And how can we be doing our form of wailing, grieving, mourning, whatever it is, in order to come to a place of presence or moving forward in some way, reconnecting to each other, reconnecting to our bodies, all that.
Reconnecting to what life is. Life is there's a great deal of grief. What grief work and what grief means to me, it's the same as what love means to me or what empathy means to me. It's slow scrutinizing curiosity and attention that's uncomfortable. Right? And grief is a thing that culturally we're not comfortable with, right? And Mm-mm. grief is often a thing that we want to contain in these like little boxes, as we do most things. But to your example of the wailing women, we need it. It's messy, and it's big, and it's scary, and we need each other in it. When I mentioned grief before, I've experienced it in a number of ways. One of them most recently is thinking about, I lost my dog, Scooby, last year. Mm-hmm. It was Black Labrador, and he was with us for like 14 years. Just the best. And I was reflecting on his life and thinking about how with big love comes big grief, right?
Yeah.
And my immediate, like in the like months after I was experiencing grief and telling myself that our next dog or our current dog, Rescue Maddie, I'm going to try to temper my love. I told myself that. I was just like, I can't do that. I don't think I have that in me. And I wouldn't change the heartache of losing Scooby for anything. Like I need to love big, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's one context that I wonder if you resonate with. But the other is, I think it's maybe more resonant to what we're talking about here, but I mentioned sort of raised in evangelical Christianity and in a container that was not safe in a lot of ways. Abusive father, etc. Mm-hmm. And getting out of that and working through the trauma of those experiences and doing work on myself, I've had to let a lot go and create very clear boundaries and lose people along the way, right? As we sort of grow into ourselves, we naturally shed stuff. Mm. And that's big old grief, right?
I've had some really powerful conversations with ex-evangelicals who talk about that particular grief. Because from what I understand in evangelical communities, there is such a sense of identity in the collective and like a tribalism, and to no longer identify with it is to be like lost at sea. Like, oh my gosh,
totally.
Who am I? Who are my people? What is going on?
And what's really in like a nuance of that, and I think which is what is true for me in that experience, is I don't, like, in reflecting now as a 40-year-old person on my experience in the church, it was never a deep belief of mine. It was, this is what you did, and this is, these are the things that you go along with it, right? And even then, it's still a pretty, there's still big grief in that, because it's your life, it's your language, it's what you know, it's the people you know, it's the Sundays, it's, you know, it's all of it. And then when that's stripped away, what's left, right?
Yeah. What's left?
I'm right. Left.
Yeah. Have you incorporated like ritual and back into your life in some way, community ritual?
First of all, Becca, this is my podcast. How dare you? I'm just kidding.
I love it.
You're so sweet and generous. I love it. I try to. I do. I mean, in connecting with nature, I like to hike regularly and run, you know, in the woods regularly. I write, I read. Those are sort of rituals for me. Recently, the past like 2 years, I've been experimenting with mushrooms. That has been a pretty ritualistic experience for me. Jessica and I recently have been reading aloud Thich Nhat Hanh writings. That's been pretty sweet and lovely, like Saturday morning thing we can do together. Still finding those things, I think. How about you? What are some of your daily things that, I mean, I read your book, so I know some of them, obviously, but.
Oh, all those got wiped clean when I had a baby, though. I wrote that book when I was pregnant.
Right.
So I am literally beginning again.
Yes.
I mean, my experience of having a child, thank you for sharing that, by the way, on your own podcast. I appreciate it. My experience of having a child was like a total obliteration of identity, and not in a crisis way. Well, it was a little crisis, but in more of a like walking over a threshold into a new phase of life, which is a rite of passage. We all have those. It was a big one for me, where all of a sudden, I didn't have the same sort of time freedom, and I don't have the same brain power, and I'm getting to know who I am now on the other side of this massive moment. And so I just want to know everyone's ritual, because I'm like, what are mine now? And I think it's like my first sip of morning tea. It's nursing my baby and watching the sun come up. It's saying hello to the moon every night with her before I take her down to go to sleep. It's getting into my garden at least one day a week. It used to be twice a day, one day a week, just to check on how things are going.
Yeah,
it's like a long hug with my partner. Just at the end of a day, just to be like, we made it through another day.
And love like that.
Yeah, it feels like a physical body intention for the next day. Yeah, and I'm calling in more community gathering. And that's what I was curious about with you, just coming from I think that's something churches give a lot of people, is that sense of like, you know, communing.
Sure.
we're in worship, and how mm-hmm. we can still give that to ourselves in other ways. And so, like on Sunday, I'm inviting over some people, and we're gonna just, like, I have a friend who is a singer, and she's gonna just lead us in some songs, and it's a communal potluck, and I'm just making sure not everyone brings hummus, so we actually have full bellies. And we're gonna do it for 3 hours.
Wow.
And half the people are parents and half the people aren't parents, because I want to mix the two. Uh-huh. And that's what I'm doing, and I'm keeping it simple. And
it's beautiful.
So this is my edging back in mm-hmm. to a life of ritual that feeds me.
I really love that. And it reminds me that I did last year, not 20, I think 2020, I did this the first year of the pandemic. I did a reading hour every Sunday where friends with their kids came over, and in our backyard, we had tea, and then we all just read our separate books quietly for a couple of hours with kids and everything. And it was the best. I loved it. And then it just kind of tapered off. People got too busy, and then it just stopped. Yeah. And I've been thinking about maybe trying to bring that back in, because it was pretty great.
That sounds delightful.
Yeah.
And what an opportunity.
Intentional reading time.
Oh my gosh, don't we all want that? But then we can't quite make the time for it. And then the day ends and we're like scrolling on our phone, like, why didn't I read?
I know.
Maybe I'm just speaking for myself. No, but also,
speaking for me.
What a beautiful way to co-regulate in person, in community. Like, all your bodies are in like a resting state mm-hmm. of taking in what you're reading. And then that's all your like mirror neurons are connecting. Mm-hmm. Like the mycelium mm-hmm. underneath, or like the tree roots, right? The tree internet. Like, our bodies are doing the same thing. And that's something you gave to each other to literally calm your nervous systems in a really intense year. What a beautiful gift.
Yeah. Thank you. I loved it. The other ritual that, as I was reflecting, as I was listening to you, I love to put on a record and just sit and listen without looking at my phone, without really anything, just sitting and listening. It's pretty great if I can do it. I can't always do it, but sometimes I can. That's great.
It sounds great just hearing you talk about it.
Yeah. I'm in a vinyl club, and so I get a new record every month. It's like a book club. We talk about the vinyl. We each have a theme every month. It's pretty wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Becca, I mentioned boundaries before. Maybe you mentioned boundaries. Like, when I think about connection and our connection, when I go out in nature myself, I feel very humbled. I feel seen. I feel at peace. We have these giant 200-year-old oak trees in our yard, and they sort of tower over our home, and it's like they're watching out for us. And it's just really special. I love oak trees. But the other piece about connection that I have maybe felt in the past is a little overwhelm, like thinking about all of the ways that I am connected, right? So I'm wondering, like, if you've had that thought, and if you have, like, how have boundaries played a role in some of this connection work?
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Of course.
Do you mean, what do you mean by all the ways you're connected? Do you mean like people having access to you, or do you mean like technology, or do you mean like the overwhelm of like humanity on the planet?
Great. That's a wonderful question. Good clarifying question. I don't mean actually any of those things you mentioned. I meant more of on the level of you speak to in your book, right? So connecting to land, connecting to lineage, like these are like beautiful things to think about, and I think are beautifully enriching for the human spirit, truly. And I think I feel maybe I'm just reflecting truthfully. I feel a little overwhelmed by like thinking about how I'm connected to this person and this person and this tree and this rock and this, you know, you know what I mean?
Are you an introvert?
I am.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I don't have that experience. I'm an extrovert, but I am partnered to an introvert who is constantly giving me this kind of feedback that you are sharing right now.
Interesting.
And yeah, it sometimes is a tension between us where he is like, it's too much. And I'm like, I can't have enough.
Yeah.
So it's a resourcing for me. And he is sharing with me how, can we just bring it down to a thimble size? And then I'm resourced.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that question. And I can only speak from the perspective of having a partner help me realize that we have like different, that we are different human beings and what nourishes us and what energizes us. But also this definition of connection and the volume and the capacity for it can be different, but I think the end result can be the same.
Yeah. How has he responded to you sort of deepening yourself through this connection work? I mean, has he had to create his own boundaries and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to, he made it very clear that, I was like, do it all with me. Codependence. And we had to really look at that. We've been together for 16 years. So, we've worked very intentionally on the boundaries of, trying not to be codependent. And that has led us to find the rituals we each individually need and the rituals we collectively need. So he will be co-hosting with me on Sunday when we do the song and the, and he'll be lighting the fire and he'll be with me in that. But yeah, we're quite polar opposite. And so it's been really nice, honestly, to learn from him around the ways that he finds connection and he finds meaning in ritual and the ways I do. So I'm like the witchy one and I like pull him back to the roots. And he's like the stardust man who's like, you know, thinking about rockets and stars and expanding me that way. But yeah, most of what I share in the book has been an individual journey in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that even in that small example, it's a microcosm. You and your partner in relationship can be containers of, oh, there's a different perspective. I can learn something here. I can maybe let go of some bias or assumption about this and just listen and reflect. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I aim to do. So that's the goal.
It's a good aim.
The mirrors of relationships are, yeah, just a never-ending growth journey that I'm grateful to be on.
Do you think you've grown, like, in your 16 years in relationship? I've been in relationship for 14 years with Jessica, and I was just reflecting on this recently. I am a very different person than I was when I first met her. How about you?
Yeah.
Yes.
100%. Yes.
How does that feel when you like recognize that?
Really good. Really, really good. There were moments where it was really scary. We've been reflecting a lot on our relationship now that we've had a child and, sort of looking at each other like, oh, we're in another iteration of you and me again. And we've had practice, so we trust. Mm-hmm. We've had a few friends have children who come to us and be like, how do you do it? And we're like, I don't know. But then when we thought about it, we're like, well, we've had some time to realize that we'll have many versions of ourselves with each other. You know, we were together 14 years before we even got pregnant. And so in that time, we had transformations.
Yeah.
And we've learned to trust in change. So that was helpful.
So helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't, like we Jessica and I had tried, I think for a while, to have a kid and it just didn't happen. We're moving beyond that, I think, emotionally, but I'm just like reflecting on like if we had a kid early, like in our 20s even, or even in our early 30s, maybe not a good idea. Maybe it was meant for later, just for the journeys we were on. Like it might have been much harder in terms of where we were at individually. Yeah. Hmm.
I can relate.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. Yeah. Hmm.
So this book, Root and Ritual, it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
The illustration, who did the illustrations?
Her name is Amy Grimes. She's a UK-based illustrator. She's incredible.
I bet you're getting a lot of feedback about the illustration.
Oh, it was the intention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have this very strong opinion about book reading, that most of us, speaking of like head over heart, most of us, are often, not all of us. I'll just speak for myself. When I read books, it's a little bit of like, I read it and I feel like I've checked it off the list. I've read a book. I feel accomplished and I'll remember a little bit of it. Right. And, then maybe 6 months or a year later, how much of it do I remember and how much of it am I implementing into my life? If it's really been something that's shifted my perspective, dwindles pretty quickly. And so I want this book, I wanted to create a pacing. And I thought that the illustrations would not only like draw people in with its beauty. The book really is a spell for unspelling our loneliness. But to pace it so that the crux of it is I want us all to live slower lives and tune into a different pace, a pace of our bodies, a pace of the earth, a pace of the way our ancestors lived, I think, not the pace of computers. And so the illustrations were an attempt, and even the layout were an attempt at slowing down that pace, just so that the ideas could be integrated in a less competitive, quick way.
That's pretty remarkable. I love that. I'll meet you there, Becca, because I also do that. And I'm a reader. Look, I'm wearing the Call of the Wild shirt. I've been a reader my whole life. Jessica and I had a book-themed wedding.
Oh, cool.
We both have literature degrees. She teaches writing. So very like book nerdy family. And I still find myself doing that as well, where it's like, oh, I read a book and then I'm not holding it. I'm not like being intentional with it. I'm not like really letting the message sink in. And I think there's a lot there, at least for me. It's the bullshit of I have so much to do and I want to do and my big heart is leading it, but that big heart is like in this container of do and check those boxes, and it's and I want to be, and I really love that intention, because I really want to be, and I want reminders of being more slowed down.
It's a challenge.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Do you feel like having a kiddo has helped you slow down, or has put the brakes on that a bit?
Yeah. Particularly because you see our natural innateness in a child, like human innateness, and the fact that my daughter has no idea what a clock is.
Yeah.
No idea. And she literally is, she's led by her body and her emotions and by cues.
Mm-hmm.
Like she literally says goodbye to the moon hello to the moon every night and goodbye to the sun every afternoon, you know, and
love that.
And a part of that, cause I taught her, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, she's never in a rush. Ever. I'm the one who's in a rush.
Yeah.
And that's been just like humbling beyond belief. Like, whoa. You know, as every day she discovers like, oh, how her thumbs work. And then like, which she can stand on her tippy toes. And then she feels sad when I leave the room. Like just to watch a human come into their body and emotions is beautiful. And yeah, lessons being learned every day. I'm like, whoa, okay, how can I unlearn some things in my life?
Mm. So much wisdom in a little creature.
Yeah.
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 I don't know if I read it in your book or you said it on Instagram or, but you said something along the lines of like how important silliness and irreverence are in sort of building resilience.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just thought of that, but I think I have a deep silliness, Becca. Mm. It's something I would like you to know about me. I have a deep silliness. I think it's fun to be silly just in general, but it's also just, it's contagious. It's like, it's a reminder to not take myself so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reminder to disrupt that go a little bit, you know? What does silliness mean to you? What is it? How do you use silliness in your life?
I too want you to know how much I love silliness. And I think maybe you and I are in a line of work that can be really serious sounding, you know?
Yes.
And I'm really deep, and I also am really silly and love to laugh at like stupid memes. Like I love it. And I know because it's medicine for every reason you said.
Yeah.
I know I'm feeling this one. Like I want to share that more. There's something about this book and the visibility I'm having, where I'm feeling like people are sort of like tagging me with certain ideas of who I am. Mm. And all of a sudden I feel like so compelled to be like, but wait, but there's so much more to me. And like, please don't peg me as this like one type of person who's just like talking about the age of loneliness, you know, like that is very, very, very important to me. And also like, I want to belly laugh an hour a day because I know that keeps me in this. And I know I recall, you know, before the pain got to be too loud, how much I was a professional number of feelings and number of pain, and the levity, the buoyancy of the silliness, the buoyancy of laughter, of joy, of stupid memes on Instagram. It keeps me afloat in so many ways.
I like the word buoyancy for it. That's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. I like to silly dance. I Jessica and I do like silly like handshakes, or you know, we have like, I don't know, it's the best. It's the best. And I hope I never lose it. I don't know why I would, but it's like deeply rooted in me. Anyways. I'm glad you're a silly person too. And I think you're right in that in the spaces we are, it feels essential to create some levity in those spaces. And I relate to the I contain multitudes, people. Look, yeah. I'm a silly Billy. You know, it's what, like, I think that's why I do have like a tendency toward, like, and maybe this is an armor of mine, but I have a tendency when someone starts to like really truly reflecting on like maybe a meaningful way and they were in a meaningful way in which they connected to the work I do, I have to lighten it up. I have to like make it silly a little bit, and maybe that's my own armor. You know, I gotta maybe explore that a bit. But
I can relate there quite a bit.
Love it, love it. So the last thing I wanted to mention, and it's real quick, and it's such a serendipity. Jenny Heffernan Brown. I know her.
What?
So I as I finished the book and read the acknowledgments, I saw Jenny at the top. I'm like, oh my goodness, is that has to be the same. So I went to my personal Instagram account where Jenny and I follow each other, and I said, whoa, you are in the acknowledgments for this book, Root and Ritual, by Becca, who I'm interviewing this week. And she's like, no way, that's crazy. So Jenny and I worked at this internet startup, like maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. It was a long time ago. And I was like a writer, copywriter, and she was, I don't remember, maybe marketing. I think maybe marketing. I can't remember. But anyways, we knew each other from so long ago. Wow. And we're connected via Instagram. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're a buddy of Jenny's. It's hilarious.
How cool.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, this book would not be out in the world if she didn't sit in the library and hold my hand as I wrote the first parts of it. Yeah, we met at a co-working space and had babies. She had a baby too. She had two babies. So at the same time, I'm seeing her tomorrow.
Tell her I say hello.
I will. How cool. Yeah.
I mean, it's so funny because she only really, I mean, we've only connected back, you know, then, and I don't think she really knows me now, other than we're just connected on Instagram. But I remember her being a bright spot in a work environment that wasn't always very bright.
You know,
it's those early, you know, you're in your 20s and you have a job that you hate and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And what gets you through are the relationships with the people you're in the trenches with. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Anyways, I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
So, Becca, we always wrap up the show talking about our empathy heroes. So, folks in our lives who are empathetic, compassionate. They could be characters from stories. They could be famous people. They could be dead famous people. It could be imaginary friends. It could be anyone. Anyone who's like a sort of someone who roots you in compassion and empathy and is a reminder of those things for you. I will go first to give you a moment to reflect on yours. My empathy hero this week is someone I've probably mentioned in the past, but she has a new book. Her name is Lisa Oliveira. She has a new book called Already Enough. I just picked it up this week. This actually, as of this week, as of this recording, it's her book launch week. And just super proud of her. Very excited to get into the book. Lisa was a guest on episode 84 in like 2019 of this podcast. So a long, long time ago. And she's just wonderful and such a bright light in the world. So Lisa Oliveira is my empathy hero. Go order Already Enough at your local independent bookshop. And if you don't have a local independent bookshop, use bookshop.org. It's a great resource. Of course, you need to order Root and Ritual there as well. And I'll remind you about that in a moment. Anyways, Becca, your empathy hero.
Well, I know Lisa.
Because she's up in the northern California as well, right?
Yeah, and we like went to the same high school.
What? Yeah. Oh my goodness. Our worlds are colliding, Becca.
I know. Funny. She just had a baby and had a book come out, and she came with her baby to I did one little book signing in a shop nearby, and she walked in. I just was like, oh my God. I know. I'm so, her book is incredible. Highly recommend it. Yeah. She's wonderful. Okay. My empathy hero.
Yeah. And you don't have to narrow it down to one. You can name a couple.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to tell you the real deal. What came to mind? Sure. Are you familiar with this latest Disney movie, Encanto?
Yes. It's my heart. Please explain why you love it.
Oh, it's like magical realism. The house is alive. It's like animist and so beautiful and honoring of like the, just like the, not just like Colombian culture, but just like the pan Latin African culture that feeds into it. The music is so good. Lin-Manuel Miranda, you can feel like the hints of Hamilton and In the Heights in the songs. The songs are earworms. They just get into you and they're incredible. The beautiful dresses, the expressions of bodies. There's no classical love story or savior story. It's just a beautiful, beautiful story about the main character, Mirabel, finding her magic. So that movie particularly Mirabel, really, it stuck with me. I can't stop thinking about this movie.
Same.
It's just, yeah, it's good.
It's very good.
Not since Inside Out, which also chef's kiss, both of those. Yeah. So that's like really, truly what came to mind. And I have to watch it again. Someone just told me everyone's clothing, you have to look closely at their clothing because there are like things woven or designed into, like for instance, Louisa, who is the strong sister who sings about the pressure of being a perfectionist and just wanting to rest, which I really related to, like on her dress, like there's barbells sewn into it.
Wow.
And then anyways, that's just an aside. I'm becoming like a Disney fangirl, but that movie was very powerful for me.
Well, you're a mom, so you better get used to it.
I know. Well, it feels like, they're getting in my child's lifetime. They're going to be just really exciting and something I want her to watch and be a part of. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good. I loved it as well. I followed this therapist, Yolanda Renteria, who's a trauma therapist on Instagram. And I can't remember her background, but Latin descent. And she went through a whole sort of real series about each of the characters and their Enneagrams. And Mirabel is like the cycle breaker of trauma, transgenerational trauma. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then the instrumental or like the only Spanish language song. And then they go through like the ancestral traumatic story. Oh my gosh. It's so beautiful.
So good. So good. Yeah. That's a great empathy hero. Great shout. Becca. Good one. A+. If I were to grade it, there's no grades.
Inside, I was like, good. He thinks I did a good job.
Oh, Inside Out. Yeah, no, right. I see you. I hear you. I'm with you. Inside Out. Yeah, also amazing. I loved Moana as well.
Oh my gosh. How Moana's could I not special, have said but, Moana? I watched it on a plane and was sobbing, which is, you know, par for the course for me. The scene where she comes up in the ocean and then the fiery, I forget the name, Tafiti.
Yeah.
The fiery Tafiti. Island woman. And then they touch foreheads and
so good.
Oh
yeah.
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 Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has seen it because I've talked about Moana endlessly on this show. Probably.
Oh, have you? Okay. Okay.
All right. So Becca, where can the Feely humans out there connect with you? Obviously, order Root and Ritual, your lovely new book, etc.
Yeah, well, I'm laying low in these winter times. So you can learn more about the book at rootandritualbook.com. You can order it anywhere. But on that page, I have just like a lot of bonusy things, including in the book, I share like recipes and activities and rituals. And I created a bunch of little videos of some of them, like, like making your own body oil, or like how to do an altar, an ancestral altar, things like that. So if you want to learn a little more, you can go to rootandritualbook.com or order the book Root and Ritual. I have a podcast too, because if you're listening, you're a podcast listener kind of person. It's called Belonging, not the mega church podcast. The Belonging.
Really? There's a Belonging mega church podcast?
And they trademarked it. Yeah. But yeah, look, Belonging, Becca Piastrelli, some version of spelling that, you'll find it. And I'm on Instagram here and there, Becca Piastrelli. Again, try to spell it. It'll find me. The algorithms are smart. Yeah. Come hang out.
Amazing. Well, listeners, all the links to those things will be in the show notes at feelyhuman.co. Becca, this was just so lovely. I really enjoyed connecting with you. It feels good. It felt good. I feel like we're simpatico in a lot of ways. I feel very aligned with you. This was special. Thank you.
Same. Yeah, I feel very nourished by this conversation, which is such a treat.
Glad to hear it. Well, listeners, as I always say, I'm here, you're here, we're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring, pale blue dot. We have each other. It's Yumi Empathy.